ॐ अग्निमिनन्दस्य जना जना सुलकया चक्षुस्मृतञ्जेन तस्मै श्रीरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्तपितां जेन भूतले सायं प्रकदामायां दधति सापनन्तिकम्। वंशिकौपतुर्भ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैश्च प्रीतरं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। Reading from the middle of the third chapter of the seventh canto. Just previously, we've heard how Hiranyakashipu, in his great enmity with the Lord and the Lord's followers, the demigods, began to perform austerities, very severe austerities, to please Lord Brahma. And his mind was so fixed on gaining power with which he could harass the universe, take control of and harass the universe, that he did this for 18,000 years. 18,000 years, standing upon the tips of his toes, hands upward, looking upward. And during that time, on the Mandara Mountain where he was performing the austerities, or around that place, the ants ate him, the worms and other bugs ate his entire body, but he was so fixed that nothing disturbed him, and indeed his entire body except for his bones were eaten. And he was circulating his life air through the bones itself, and in this way staying alive. And an anthill had built up around him, and he was gaining so much power that the entire universe was disturbed. So finally the demigods went to Lord Brahma and asked him to do whatever was required. So Lord Brahma went to Hiranyakashipu and told him that he was pleased. Pleased because the austerities were done to satisfy him. And indeed Lord Brahma did come, and with some holy water from his kamadalu, he sprinkled this upon Hiranyakashipu, and this asura's body was restored, and it became young, golden, powerful enough to withstand the striking of thunderbolts. So then Lord Brahma said something that predicated the Lord's pastime and the Lord's appearance. It's interesting how, because what he did was, Lord Brahma said, "You have pleased me and I will give you whatever you want." But indirectly he told him he could not award him what he really wanted. And what is it that Hiranyakashipu really wanted? It is what every other living entity in this world really wants, is to never die. Because death ruins all our plans. And ultimately, when we preach in this world and we want to make everyone miserable, and even the people who are happy, we can make them miserable by reminding them that yes, it's temporary, you're going to die. You're going to die. Everyone you love in this world is going to die. Your mother, your grandmother, your wife or husband, your children, your grandchildren, your great-great-grandchildren, everyone's going to die, and we can really shake them because it's so true. This ruins everything. This is the time factor crushing in this world. And this time factor is, Kapila Muni describes to Devahuti, this is actually Krishna. This is the super soul. So we cannot be happy in the material world. So Hiranyakashipu was very demonic. And he was He had his idea was to devise his own way to become happy. And the first plan, of course, because he was intelligent, he was philosophical, he understood that as long as there's death, there's no happiness. So I'm going to perform austerities and gain deathlessness. Taste amrit. Amrit is nectar, but it means amrita, no death. So when Lord Brahma hinted to him that I'll give you anything, but I can't award that, even I have to die. So Aranyakashipu was very intelligent, and he thought he'd gain what he wanted indirectly. So here's what he said in text 26-27. First, before he was going to, at the end of this, at the end of his words to Lord Brahma, he's going to ask him for some benedictions, but first he's going to pray to Lord Brahma and praise him. One could say it's flattery, because he's practically speaking going to glorify Lord Brahma as if he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Brahma is the topmost person within this universe. He's the head of the Brahma Sampradaya. Lord Krishna directly instructed him within the heart, within his heart. But yet he's empowered. He carries within him his potency, comes from Krishna. He's incredibly powerful, incredibly potent. But that potency is actually Krishna, Krishna's potency that he's carrying. Krishna is using him to perform his will within the material world in the way of creation, especially the secondary creation called Saga Visaga. The Visaga, the secondary creation, where Lord Brahma takes the ingredients that the Supreme Lord has already made, and he takes those ingredients and he manipulates them like an engineer of sorts, and through that he devises the material world. So using the ingredients that the Lord has made and using his own energy, and it's an incredibly complex material world. Even the body, no one can understand, and nor will anyone ever be able to understand it fully, nor any matter, nor one square centimeter of this wooden podium. The scientists will never be able to understand it completely. What to speak of the entire universe? So either the macrocosm or the microcosm is beyond anyone's comprehension. Our human body, psychology, anything, everything is actually inconceivably complex. So this is Lord Brahma's incredible, incredible genius. He's carrying the creative potency of the Lord. So he's made this universe. So Aranyakashipu is going to glorify him as the Supreme Lord. He's a worshipper of the demigods, but with an incredible motive, as we've heard. He wants to usurp the position of Brahma, but he's worshipping him as the Supreme Lord. What kind of mentality is this? So demonic. Worshipping, giving all respect, and then practically he wants to take over the universe. If one doesn't know the power of another and acts in a disrespectful way, it's one thing. But how much audacity is required to know the power and still try to overthrow that? To be dependent. He's dependent on Lord Brahma for the benediction. With that benediction, he's trying to take over Lord Brahma's position practically. So here he's going to glorify Lord Brahma as the Supreme Lord, practically speaking, with this mentality, with this desire in his heart. So is this really glorification? If one glorifies God, trying to become God, is that glorification of God? If one has a boss in a business and he's working under that boss and he needs something from the boss and he's telling the boss, you're so expert at this, you manage in this way, you're so creative. But inside he's thinking that how am I going to get rid of the boss and take over his position? So could this possibly actually be glorification? Certainly not. Not truly. Not love, not bhakti, not devotion. But yet he's doing this. He's seeing within Brahma the creative potency of the Lord and practically glorifying that. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord within this universe. And indeed, Lord Brahma is the Supreme Lord within this universe. At the end of each day of his life, the universe is fully covered with dense darkness by the influence of time. And then again, during his next day, that self-effulgent Lord, by his own effulgence, manifests, maintains, and destroys the entire cosmic manifestation through the material energy, which is invested with the three modes of material nature. He, Lord Brahma, is the shelter of those modes of nature, Sattvagun, Rajagun, and Tamagun. So he's the creator, he's manifesting the destroyer of the universe, but he's also saying that during his day, this occurs. And at the end of each day of his life, but Lord Brahma also has a limited lifespan, although it's incredibly long. So, and he's explaining how the modes of material nature which control everything within this world are within him. Here's, we'll read the first part of Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word abhivyanag jagadidam refer, the words abhivyanag jagadidam refer to he who creates the cosmic manifestation. The original creator is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, janmadyasyayataha. Lord Brahma is the secondary creator. When Lord Brahma is empowered by the Lord as the engineer to create the phenomenal world, he becomes the supremely powerful feature within this universe. The total material energy is created by Krishna. And later, taking advantage of all that has necessarily been created, Lord Brahma engineers the entire phenomenal universe. At the end of Lord Brahma's day, everything up to Swargaloka is inundated with water. And the next morning, when there is darkness in the universe, Brahma again brings the phenomenal manifestation into existence. Therefore, he is described here as he who manifests this universe. 28. I offer my obeisances to the original personality within this universe, Lord Brahma, who is cognizant and who can apply his mind and realized intelligence in creating this cosmic manifestation. It is because of his activities that everything within the universe is visible. He is therefore the cause of all manifestations. So Lord Brahma is the cause. Everything is manifest through him, but yet he is the secondary cause. He is not the primal cause, the prime mover. Just like if I push this over, of course I won't push the drum over, and then it hits the floor. And what will happen? There will be a sound, a crashing sound. So one can say, what is the cause of the crashing sound? And one person can answer, it's the drum. And it's true, the drum did cause that. But I pushed it. So I am a more primal cause than the drum is the cause of the sound. So Krishna is the... But what caused me to do that even? There's different motivations behind that. So when we trace back all the causes of everything, back through ourselves, back through all the demigods, back through Lord Brahma, we'll come to the point of understanding Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes, the original cause, Adi Purusha, the original person. And Prabhupada's given the example or expressed the logic. If I have a cause, and who's my cause? My mother, my father, they're persons. And my parents have causes. They just didn't pop out of nowhere. They came from their parents, my grandparents. And my grandparents had causes. And all the way back, every cause of every person is a person. We go back and back and back and back and back and back and back. Each person has a cause that's a person. So why do we think that the original cause is impersonal? As every cause of a person is a person, so the original cause is similarly also a person. The original person, the Adi Purush, the Adi person, the original. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. I worship that original personality, personage. So he is the cause of all manifestations. He's saying it is Lord Brahma at this point. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Vedanta Sutra begins by declaring that the Absolute Person is the original source of all creation, Janmad Yasya Yataha. One may ask whether Lord Brahma is the Supreme Absolute Person. No, the Supreme Absolute Person is Krishna. Brahma receives his mind, intelligence, materials, and everything else from Krishna. And then he becomes the secondary creator, the engineer of this universe. In this regard, we may note that the creation does not take place accidentally because of the explosion of a chunk. So there, the chunk theory, or what's the more, possibly the more current one, the Big Bang. So what is banging? Is it a chunk? No. Excuse me?
Matter against antimatter.
The black hole, the infamous black hole. We do wonder if the black hole is the navel of the black lord. Because everything comes from that black hole. Lord Brahma comes from that. Everything comes from that. But it's interesting how they say there's an expansion, immediate expansion, and then it keeps on expanding. And then there's a contraction. A contraction. That's the devastation of the universe. And it goes back into the black hole. That's what happens. And all the material energy at that time becomes avyakta, or unmanifest within the body of Lord Vishnu. So the Vedanta Sutra begins by declaring that the Absolute Person is the original source of all creation, Janmad Yasya Yataha. One may ask whether Lord Brahma is the Supreme Absolute Person. No, the Supreme Absolute Person is Krishna. Brahma receives his mind, intelligence, materials, and everything else from Krishna. And then he becomes the secondary creator, the engineer of this universe. In this regard, we may note that the creation does not take place accidentally because of the explosion of a chunk. Such nonsensical theories are not accepted by Vedic students. No one talks about being the explosion of a chunk at this point, because then one naturally asks, well, where did the chunk come from? Where did the black hole come from? Where did the matter and antimatter come from? So one may come up with, it's this, but where does this come from? So what is the original source of the source? When one says that there's a source that has no other source, that is the definition of God. There is no cause beyond him. Such nonsensical theories of a chunk that explodes, a chunk that exists and then explodes and everything comes from that, are not accepted by Vedic students. The first created living being is Brahma, who is endowed with perfect knowledge and intelligence by the Lord. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Rindaya Adikavaye. Although Brahma is the first created being, He is not independent, for he receives help from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his heart. There is no one but Brahma at the time of creation, and therefore he receives his intelligence directly from the Lord through the heart. This has been discussed in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Brahma is described in this verse as the original cause of the cosmic manifestation, and this applies to his position in the material world. There are many, many such controllers, all of whom are created by the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. This is illustrated by an incident described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. When the Brahma of this particular universe was invited by Krishna to Dwarka, he thought that he was the only Brahma. In other words, he only knew his own universe. Therefore, when Krishna inquired from his servant which Brahma was at the door to visit, so Brahma came on Krishna's request, and the doorkeeper said, "Who is it? And I'll tell the Lord that you're there." So he said, "Brahma has come." So therefore, when Krishna inquired from his servant which Brahma was at the door to visit, Lord Brahma was surprised, because he thought he was the only Brahma, the only original person, because he's the original person of the universe. He replied that, of course, Lord Brahma, the father of the four Kumaras, was waiting at the door. The four-headed Brahma, actually, he said too. Lord Brahma asked Krishna, then when he got to see Krishna, Lord Brahma asked Krishna why he had inquired which Brahma had come. Because that implied that there were other Brahmas, not only this one. He was then informed that there are millions of other Brahmas, because there are millions of universes. Krishna then called all the Brahmas, who immediately came to visit him. The Chaturmukha Brahma, the four-headed Brahma of this universe, thought himself a very insignificant creature in the presence of so many Brahmas with so many heads. Thus, although there is a Brahma who is the engineer of each universe, Krishna is the original source of all of them. Text 29. Hiranyakashipu continued, "Your lordship, being the origin of life in this material world, is the master and controller of the living entities, both moving and stationary, and you inspire their consciousness. You maintain the mind and the acting and control and knowledge and acquiring senses, and therefore you are the great controller of all the material elements and their qualities, and you are the controller of all desires." Again, Krishna is the original source. "My dear Lord, by your form as the Vedas personified, and through knowledge relating to the activities of all the Jagyic Brahmins, you spread the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies of the seven kinds of sacrifices headed by Agni Stom. Indeed, you inspire the Jagyic Brahmanas to perform the rituals mentioned in the three Vedas. Being the Supreme Soul, the Supersoul of all living entities, you are beginningless, endless and omniscient beyond the limits of time and space." So he's glorifying Lord Brahma as the Supreme. "Indeed, even Narada Muni, who was Brahma's son, beloved son, when he saw Brahma performing austerities to gain power to do the creation, he inquired from Lord Brahma whether or not there was someone above him. Because if one is performing austerities to please another, to gain something, that means that one isn't the Supreme. So even Narada, at one point, inquired who is the Supreme, because he's so powerful. Lord Brahma is so powerful. So far, his powers are so far beyond our powers that one can easily mistake that for being ultimately powerful, his power to be ultimately powerful. Even the tendency to do piety or to do impiety, that's inspired by the Lord in the heart. So how tiny and insignificant we are. It's just like if we see a huge mountain, We may think it's the biggest mountain that is, but there may be something bigger still. But it's so much superior in size to ourselves that we can't comprehend something bigger. But that biggest, whom no one is bigger than, is the Supreme Lord, and that's Krishna. Krishna stu bhagavan sayam aham savasya prabhavo mataksavam pravartate itti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita aham eva sam eva gre nanyat yat sada sat param pascharaham yare tatscha yo visheshekta sosmyaham. Before anything or anyone, there is Krishna. Again, even the tendency to do good, piety, we're not independent in that. Or even to do bad, like Aranyakashipu, we're not independent in that. Savasya chaham videsana vishtu. He's in everyone's heart. He inspires this according to our desires. Yayatamam prapadyante. He reciprocates with our desires. Oh my Lord, your Lordship is eternally awake, seeing everything that happens. As eternal time, you reduce the duration of life for all living entities through your different parts, such as moments, seconds, minutes, and hours. Nonetheless, you are unchanged. This is actually one of the definitions of God, that everything is changing. This is the effect of time. Time changes everything. It forces change upon everything. Time is a function of the supersoul. Everything in the material world changes, shifts, transforms, transmutes continuously, unstoppably, whether we like it or we don't like it. Continuously changing. This is Krishna's function, but Krishna himself never changes. Everything changes, but he never changes. He is so huge. A material example is like the ocean. The ocean is expanded to the shore. But a great storm may come and pour water down on the ocean. But it's not that the ocean increases in size by the pouring of the water. It's so huge that there is no increase, no matter what happens. And there is no diminishing, no matter what happens. It's not that there's a drought for 10 years in a row and the ocean shrinks. Or if it rains, heavy rainfall for years and years, the ocean increases in size. It's so vast. So Krishna is unchanging. But yet the material energy is changing, and the material energy is his energy. So in that sense, does Krishna change? But in the vastness of Krishna, he is one and unchanging in his vastness. So nonetheless, you are unchanged, resting in one place as the Supersoul, Witness, and Supreme Lord, the birthless, all-pervading controller who is the cause of life for all living entities. So all change. This is all this changing. How powerful is Krishna? Try and stop time. Just try. We're proud of our power, we're proud of our freedom, we're proud of our intelligence. But let the most proud scientist stop himself from getting old. They're studying aging, the process of aging, with the idea of stopping it. But they won't stop it quickly enough to before they die, that you can be sure of. So he is the unchanging controller, affecting complete control and complete change on everything. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Daivi esha gunamayi mama maya dharatya, because it's Daivi, because the material energy is empowered with transcendental power. It overcomes the material energy, and there's nothing the material energy or the living entity, we tiny souls within the material energy can do about it. We're under the control of this material energy, and it is devyat, it's divinely empowered. Prabhupada explains, as stated, there are many millions of living entities. The Lord is situated in the super soul in every one of them. Nonetheless, He is one. Even though there's one super soul in everyone's heart, but there's so many living entities, so that would mean that there are many super souls. But there's only one. He is one in many. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Dvaita Machutam Anadyam Ananta Rupam. He has many forms, yet there are Dvaita, one and unchanging. This is Achintya Shakti, inconceivable potency. He is the life and soul of all living entities, being situated within their hearts as the Antaryami, as enunciated by the philosophy of inconceivable oneness and difference. Since the living entities are part of God, they are one in quality with the Lord. Yet, they are different from Him. So everything, nothing is completely different from Him, and nothing is completely the same as Him. He is in His own category, the Supreme. But everything is dependent on Him, yet He is different nonetheless. Lord Brahma continued, there is nothing separate from you, whether it be better or lower, stationary or moving. The knowledge derived from the Vedic literatures, like the Upanishads, and from the sublimbs of the original Vedic knowledge, form your external body. You are Hiranyagarbha, the reservoir of the universe. But nonetheless, being situated as the Supreme Controller, you are transcendental to the material world. Nothing is different from you, but you are beyond. You are transcendental to the material world, which consists of the three modes of material nature. So it is so important that we understand how tiny we are and how great God is. And yet, we have a connection with Him. He is within everyone's heart. We have a loving connection with Him. Suridam Sabhabhutanam. He is Surit. Dear most friend. And knowing this, we should give ourselves to Him and dovetail our desires with His desires. And this is the natural consciousness of the living entity. But we must, before we can do this or be inspired to do this, we must see how powerful He is, understand His position, and in relationship to that, understand our positions. Tiny, insignificant. And His position, great, incredibly, inconceivably great. Nothing is different from Him, but yet nothing is quite exactly the same as Him. He's an individual, separate. Everything is emanating from Him, yet He is aloof. Yogamaishwayam Pashyam Yogamaishwayam, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, just behold my yogic powers, my mystic opulence. O my Lord, being changelessly situated in your own abode, you expand your universal form within this cosmic manifestation, thus appearing to taste the material world. You are Brahman, the Supersoul, the oldest, the personality of Godhead. Purport. It is said that the Absolute Truth appears in three features, namely impersonal Brahman, localized Supersoul, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The cosmic manifestation is the gross material body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enjoys the taste of the material mellows by expanding His parts and parcels, the living entities who are qualitatively one with Him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, is situated in the Vaikuntha planets, where He enjoys the spiritual mellows, Therefore, the one absolute truth, Bhagavan, pervades all by his material cosmic manifestations, the supreme Brahman effulgence, and his personal existence as the Lord. So he is everywhere. He knows everything that we experience, that we enjoy, but yet his enjoyment is on a different level in the spiritual world. And he wishes us to go there too. He is everywhere. This is the super soul. 34. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme, who, in his unlimited, unmanifested form, has expanded the cosmic manifestation, the form of the totality of the universe. He possesses external and internal energies, and the mixed energy called the marginal potency, which consists of all the living entities. So he is Janmadyasya Yataha, again, Parasya Shakti Avividaiva Shuyate, that he has so many energies. And the living entity is his energies, are his energies. Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta Chaita Kyagya Tatapara Avidya Karma Samgyadya Tritya Shakti Ushite. So he has the spiritual energy, the material energy, and the jiva, the individual soul, that's another energy called Tataska Shakti. Prabhupada's purport. So all these, everything is coming from him. He is the source. Prabhupada's purport. The Lord is endowed with unlimited potencies. Parasya Shaktir Vividaya Shuyate, which is summarized as three, namely external, internal, and marginal. The external potency manifests this material world, the internal potency manifests the spiritual world, and the marginal potency manifests the living entities, who are mixtures of internal and external. The living entity, being part and parcel of the Parabrahman, is actually internal potency. But because of being in contact with the material energy, he is an emanation of material and spiritual energies. Spiritual energies controlled by Maya, the Maya Shakti, the material energy. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is above the material energy and is engaged in spiritual pastimes. The material energy is only an external manifestation of his pastimes. In the same way that Maya in this world, the Maya Shakti, Krishna's Maya Shakti, is a reflection of the spiritual Maya, Yoga Maya, by which the spiritual world works. In the same way, the activities of the living entities in this world are reflections of the activities of Krishna in the spiritual world, with each living entity imagining that he is the center, the independent center of his own little imaginary universe. And this is the cause, individually and collectively, societally, of all conflict. We're imagining that we are the center, or my community is the center, the most important, the all-important, and we'll use our power to exert our influence. And when someone is more powerful than us, we'll rip them down. Envy comes to the heart. This is the cause of conflict. We're living an illusory life as if we were the center, a reflection of the spiritual world where Krishna is the center, the all-powerful. Look how qualified he is. This is just, even Hiranyakashipu is accepting the power, that there is a power, some great power, whom he must get help from to continue with his own plans. But he's so powerful. And we are living a reflection of that power, an illusion. We're dependent, an illusion, imagining that we're independent. And therefore, our illusion is ended when the living entity, Savadamam Prityaja Mamekam Saranamrita, gives himself to Krishna. places himself under Krishna's control with great loving devotion. Now Brahma, having finished with his flowery, but Hiranyakashipu has finished with his glorification, will get to the point. He calls him Varada Uttama, the best of all benedictors. He's getting to his point. You are the one, because you are so powerful. I've described all your powers. So that means you have so much power to give benediction, to give me something. Now here's what I want. Oh Lord, oh my Lord, oh best of the givers of benediction, if you will kindly grant me the benediction I desire, please let me not meet death from any of the living entities created by you. Now, his plan begins to unfold. We'll read the second paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. Thus far, Hiranyakashipu has adored Lord Brahma as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and has expected to become immortal by the benediction of Lord Brahma. Now, however, having come to understand that even Lord Brahma is not immortal, because at the end of the millennium, Lord Brahma will also die, Hiranyakashipu is very carefully asking him for benedictions that will be almost as good as immortality. His first proposal is that he not be killed by any of the different forms of living entity created by Lord Brahma within this material world. So, according to God's law and the force of time, everyone created must die. And Hiranyakashipu is thinking to outwit this. First attempt. Please grant me that I won't die at the hands or by the power of any living entity created by you. Grant me that I not die within any residence or outside any residence, during the daytime or night, nor in the ground or in the sky. Grant me that my death not be brought about by any being that other than those created by you. So let me not be killed by those created by you or those not created by you, nor by any weapon, nor by any human being or animal. Purport. Hiranyakashipu was very much afraid of Vishnu's becoming an animal to kill him, because his brother had been killed by Vishnu when the Lord took the shape of a boar, Varahadev. He was therefore very careful to guard against all kinds of animals. But even without taking the shape of an animal, Vishnu could kill him by hurling his Sudarshan chakra, which can go anywhere without the Lord's physical presence. Therefore, Hiranyakashipu was careful to guard against all kinds of weapons. He guarded against all kinds of time, space, and countries. Daytime, nighttime, inside, outside, I can't be killed. Something, someone created by you, someone not created by you. He guarded against all kinds of time, space, and countries because he was afraid of being killed by someone else in another land. There are many other planets, higher and lower, and therefore he prayed for the benediction of not being killed by any resident of any of these planets. There are three original deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesha. Hiranyakashipu knew that Brahma would not kill him, but he also wanted not to be killed by Lord Vishnu or Lord Shiva. Consequently, he prayed for such a benediction. Thus, Hiranyakashipu thought himself securely protected from any kind of death caused by any living entity within this universe. He also carefully guarded against natural death, which might take place within his house or outside of his house. Grant me, but this was not enough. So, Chalu, very cunning fellow, this Hiranyakashipu, grant me that I not meet death from any entity, living or non-living. Grant me further that I not be killed by any demigod or demon, or by any great snake from the lower planets. Since no one can kill you in the battlefield, you have no competitor. Therefore, Grant me the benediction that I too may have no rival. Give me sole lordship over all the living entities and presiding deities, and give me all the glories obtained by that position. Furthermore, give me all the mystic powers attained by long austerities and the practice of yoga, for these cannot be lost at any time. Such ambition. Purport. Lord Brahma obtained his supreme position due to long austerities and penances, mystic yoga, meditation, and so on. Hiranyakashipu wanted a similar position. The ordinary powers achieved by mystic yoga, austerities, and other processes are sometimes vanquished, but the powers obtained by the mercy of the Lord are never vanquished. Hiranyakashipu therefore wanted a benediction that would never be vanquished. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 3rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Hiranyakashipu's Plan to Become Immortal. So with great intelligence, great determination, great austerity, great power, but what was backing it up? A demonic mentality. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So different from devotion, devotional mentality. Even though someone may, a devotee may perform austerities, undergo hardships, or he may plan and scheme, he may control things, he may exert power and influence, he may become glorious, but his mentality is completely different, completely, day and night different. One has this Hiranyakashipu Asura mentality, and the devotee's desire is to glorify Krishna and to please Krishna and to serve Krishna. That's his only desire. That's the excitement, the thrill, the ecstasy of his life. Any questions or comments? Thank you. Yeah.
Theory is the theory that there is system in a chaotic, in a chaos. Meaning, the Big Bang occurred, and it just randomly cast all this that we see today. But at one point, it will be annihilated again. So there is a chaos, but in the momentary chaos, there will be some sort of order in that chaos.
Yeah.
So my question is, what you earlier mentioned, that the supreme cause of all causes, and the definition of God would be, there is no more cause behind that.
Yes.
So what would be the deficiency in saying that the first cause is just these two things, matter and antimatter, and that there is no cause beyond that? What would be the defect in that theory?
How could, in your experience or the scientist's experience, has at any time order come from chaos? They should make an experiment and stop all their experiments and see if order comes and if knowledge comes by not experimenting in any way, if they're such believers in that. When you have a scientific experiment, it's not considered valid unless you control all the circumstances. Because they want to do something very orderly to prove. Because there has to be order for there to be control. So when does order come from lack of control and disorder? So what's their example? Just random chance. That's that's the only thing they could say. But that doesn't work. It's not, first of all, it's not scientific. It's random. It's chance. So where is the proof of that? When every other experience we have shows that randomness brings chaos. They employ computer programmers to control a thought, a process. When they also can write a program to make chaos, can make a number come up, right? Just randomly. Many programs are like that, right? Receipt numbers are generated in that way. So that means that the randomness has come from intelligence and order. The order has come from the randomness. I mean, that's how I would view it. I mean, I'm sure there are very sophisticated arguments against this. The information theory argument that Sariputta uses against evolution. That the odds of, there's so many examples, and there's other scientists who also show that the odds of something orderly, the eye evolving is impossible. The odds against it are so small that it's basically impossible. It's inconceivable. It's not a scientific theory. And that's just the eye, one little part of the body. How about digestion in the stomach? When each piece is interdependent and no piece has individual use unless the whole system is in place. So how could something like that evolve by necessity and chance and survival of the fittest? It just doesn't make any sense. What to speak of the peacock feather? Now how is a peacock because it developed these feathers like that all of a sudden by chance? And can dance in that. You've seen peacocks dancing, and that suddenly it's made it more apt to survive. What do you think? I don't think it's scientific. I mean, we've been brought up in this way, but it's not actually very scientific or logical. But if you try to challenge this principle, they'll make so much fun of you, they'll ignore you, they'll call you this, they'll call you that. Worse than any religious fanatic.
Yes. Actually, when you mentioned Prabhupada, the example, the only example they can give is of boiling water. The theory of chaos emanated from there. That is, at one point in that boil, when all the molecules are chaotic, they will suddenly become very, very predictable in their nature, and you can calculate that prediction, but just for a moment in time,
right.
And then it goes up again. So that's their basis for this.
Okay, but just the boiling water. Okay, this is the boiling water theory.
Yeah.
But if just see, there's the water. Now, did the water boil by chance?
No.
There's something behind the water, applying the heat, putting it in the pot, looking at it under a microscope, turning on the gas. What, did the gas just come there to make it boil, or the wood and the fire brought there to make it boil? So we agree. You can write a program to make something randomly occur, but that program, the system that creates the randomness, is intelligent and has not come by chance. So behind the randomness, behind the chaos, is intelligence. What do you think? Prabhupada would say such radical things like, the more you kick on the faces of the scientists, the more you will advance. With boots, I kick on their faces with boots. With shoes. Because the foundation of all the atheism that's current in the world today is this. Because people naturally just accept what they learn in school. And this is what they learn in school. That it's all come, you know, Darwin this, Darwin that. And no one challenges this. the way it's presented. So it's really holding together the fabric of contemporary civilization, which, looking at it from the point of view of civility and gentility, is not very much civilized. For example, if the theory of evolution is true, who's more advanced, you or your daughter? More evolved?
My daughter.
Yes. So therefore, who should listen to who?
The other person.
You should listen to her. And really, that's what the children do think nowadays, isn't it? You know, they look at their parents and think, I mean, not your daughter. She's too young. But what do the children look at their parents and think, oh boy, they're really old fashioned. They don't really know, you know, what life is really about. So that's applied evolutionary theory into society. And the result is chaos. It's not happiness. It's not that the children are happier. When they grow up, they're happier, more satisfied adults. No, they're crazier. Crazier and crazier and crazier. And then they wonder, you know, what the drug problem and the crime problem. But they've created it. They want to fill the children up with sex and drugs and rock and roll and movies and this and that, and then they don't like the results that come along with this insanity. And sports, meaningless things, giving such importance to meaningless things. Intoxication, just intoxication. The Prabhupada was so strong about challenges, the whole basis of the contemporary civilization, and he pointed directly to who the enemy was, and he's scientists. Because they're the priests. Just like in old days, people just trusted what the priest said. The priest would quote Shastra. And everyone said, okay. But now the unquestionable priests are the scientists. And if you challenge them, you're driven out of society. No matter who you are. Even the president of South Africa, he's made comments that he doesn't think that HIV virus causes AIDS. So it may cause it, it may not. But because he's challenging what the scientists are saying, and there's much evidence to say that it doesn't, you know, whether it does or not, I don't know. But, you know, there's many intelligent people think they make such fun of him. They call him all kinds of things. And it doesn't make a difference who you are. If you challenge the priests, they're driven out of town. Fanatics.
That's true. I did my thesis and I asked everyone else who has done a PhD or a master's. The only reason they got it is because they agreed with what the Senate wanted
you
to do. And if you went otherwise, then you just keep out.
Yeah. Very heavy. So did you get your thesis?
Yeah. Just agree with me.
Yes, surrender. Yes, Prabhu. Yes, Prabhu. Sarvadhammam. So our theory is that we should surrender to Krishna. But it's heavy to surrender to Krishna because you have to fight with Aranyakashipu. Very heavy, and no one wants to fight with Aranyakashipu. So that's actually what Prabhupada wanted. He wanted heavy, deep devotees that they were ready to fight with Hiranyakashipu. That's what it actually means. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam.